Nuclear and Project 2025. Of all the threats contained in the extreme right-wing Project 25, which is being used as the playbook for the transformation of U.S. democracy into, well, we're finding out exactly what, the most ultimately damaging may be its directives about nuclear weapons. They're telling us that we need atmospheric bomb tests again, that it's essential to our security and our primacy as a nation, without considering the consequences of radioactive fallout on human life. It takes a genuine expert, a journalist who has been covering nuclear issues for more than 50 years, to remind us
fallout moves with the winds all over the world. If again we're going to have what President Kennedy called children with cancer in their bones and leukemia in their blood and poison in their lungs, we got to block, we got to stop, we got to prevent atmospheric nuclear weapons testing from happening.
And so much more. Well, when award-winning veteran environmental journalist Carl Grossman sends up the alarm and then goes through Project 2025 to highlight the nuclear dangers it includes, you see how much hotter it's getting for all of us here in that awful, dangerous, deadly seat that we all share.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's da bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. We're a show for people who know nothing about nuclear who want to know something, and people who know something about nuclear who would like to know just a little bit more. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, an eye-opening interview with award-winning veteran environmental journalist Carl Grossman. He takes us through the dangers that would be created by the proposed resumption of atmospheric nuclear testing, how Elon Musk has no right or clearance to access classified nuclear information, and then pulls out the nuclear and other energy plans buried in the Project 2025 right-wing playbook that threatened to put us all in ultimate danger. We will also have nuclear news from around the world, numbnuts of the week for outstanding nuclear boneheadedness, Linda Pence Gunter with the nuclear hot seat hot story, and more honest nuclear information than the U.S. Congress will be considering no matter how much we try to bring it to their attention. All of this coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, February 18, 2025, and here is this week's nuclear news from a different perspective. We will start out with an overview and summary of the nuclear numbnutsery for just the past week, as the Nuclear Hot Seat Hot Story with Linda Pence Gunter shows that it's a mad, 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 mad nuclear world.
Remember that 1963 comedic caper movie, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World? Okay, maybe not. It was director Stanley Kramer's escape from his more traditionally dark subject matter, Judgment at Nuremberg, The Defiant Ones, Inherit the Wind. But we seem to be finding ourselves in a very dark place these days, a mad world that is decidedly not funny. And when it comes to the nuclear news that broke just last week alone, well, we'd need a whole lot more mads than four in the title of our dystopian 2025 version. In no particular order, here is some of the nuclear madness that went down. US intelligence, if any such thing still exists, announced that it foresaw an attack by Israel on Iran's nuclear centers as soon as 6 months from now. By attack, they mean bomb. This is no idle threat. Just last October, Israel reportedly destroyed a secret Iranian nuclear weapons research facility, although Iran denies it is developing nuclear weapons. In 2010, the Stuxnet computer virus, a cyber attack likely launched by Israel and the United States, infected computers at Iran's Bushehr nuclear power plant before spreading across other facilities, including to the Natanz uranium enrichment complex. Israel has also assassinated at least five of Iran's nuclear scientists between 2010 and 2024. Also this week came the news that Japan would go for a, quote, maximization of nuclear power, aiming for a 20% energy share by 2040, with 30 reactors back up and running. This is notwithstanding the fact that the country almost lost Tokyo when the Fukushima Daiichi reactors exploded and melted down in 2011, that lands remain radiologically contaminated, populations likely permanently exiled, and Japan is busy dumping its more than 1 million tons of liquid radioactive waste stored at the site into the Pacific Ocean. From Carl Grossman, we learn that the Trump administration could be contemplating a resumption of atmospheric atomic testing, following guidance from the playbook it denies all knowledge of, Project 2025. How many mads do these situations deserve? At least a couple, maybe more? But earning the full Monty of mads is surely a paper submitted last month by PhD student Andrew Haverly with the Rochester Institute of Technology entitled Nuclear Explosions for Large-Scale Carbon Sequestration. Haverly's idea is to use a buried 81 gigaton nuclear explosion in the seabed to accelerate carbon capture by pulverizing basalt and using enhanced rock weathering, which he says, quote, can sequester significant quantities of atmospheric CO2 by accelerating the natural chemical breakdown of silicate rock such as basalt. Let's remember that Russia's Tsar bomber, the biggest nuclear detonation ever, was 50 megatons, which was already 2,000 times more powerful than the 25 kiloton plutonium bomb that wiped out Nagasaki. Detonating an 81 gigaton nuclear device could cause a global catastrophe if done improperly, cautions Haverly. Improperly? An exclamation involving Sherlock Holmes springs to mind here. Apart from the fact that there is much debate about whether carbon sequestration is even effective or a good idea, why would anyone, other than possibly a real-life Dr. Strangelove, even consider this? Finally, in the early hours of last Friday morning, a missile-armed drone launched as part of Russia's war in Ukraine exploded on the roof of the Chernobyl reactor dome. It was not sent as a Valentine, but it does remain anonymous, with Ukraine accusing Russia of firing it and Russia in full denial. The protective shield was penetrated and there was a subsequent fire, but reportedly radiation levels in the area did not rise, this time. It's chilling to think that the next Chernobyl could actually happen at Chernobyl. Amidst all this, The Guardian reported that US President says he wants to talk to the leaders of China and Russia about nuclear disarmament. Quote, there's no reason for us to be building brand new nuclear weapons. We already have so many. You could destroy the world 50 times over, 100 times over. And here we are building new nuclear weapons, and they're building nuclear weapons, Trump was quoted as saying. This actually sounds sensible, which is frightening in itself, because we agree with this and would be trumpeting it and celebrating it and retweeting or blue-skying it or whatever, except for the fact of its source, which makes it suspect. There's a quid pro quo in here somewhere. We just don't know what it is. And in other news, I'm Linda Pence-Gunter with Beyond Nuclear, reporting for Nuclear Hot Seat. And that's this week's hot story.
You've heard it before, but here it is again in its proper numbnutsical context.
Nuclear Hot Seat. Nuclear Hot Seat. Nuclear Hot Seat. Numbnuts of the week.
Late on Thursday, February 13, multiple staff members at the National Nuclear Security Administration, or NNSA, received email with the subject line, notification of termination during probationary trial period, and inside included the wording, effective today. For further context, the NNSA is tasked with designing, building, and overseeing the U.S. nuclear weapons stockpile. And the termination notices came within hours of a Russian drone striking the Chernobyl power plant in Ukraine. In other words, we were in a mass sweep getting rid of our nuclear guardians. This massive oops was discovered less than 24 hours later, and DOGE sent a follow-up email to those employees saying, "The termination letters for some NNSA probationary employees are being rescinded. The only problem? They have no way of getting in contact with those people. When they were fired on Thursday, they lost access to their federal government email accounts. So DOGE is asking all recipients of that email to, quote, please work with your supervisors to send this information, once you get it, to people's personal contact emails. Government efficiency, indeed. For those NNSA employees who were terminated and then unterminated, if you haven't yet, I suggest you take a look at the movie Margin Call, which right now is free on Prime Video. Pay attention to what happens with the Stanley Tucci character, who was let go suddenly and ill-advisedly under comparable circumstances. And when he was brought back on short notice, there was a certain amount of negotiation that ended up in him having a significant financial windfall. So to those at NNSA who have been doged, if the government wants you back, make them pay for it as best you can. Because let's face it, DOGE is just scrambling to cover their nuclear posterior before something catastrophic happens. But whatever they do, it won't prevent them from being named
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numb Nuts of the Week.
And more nuclear news out of the Oval Office, because last week, Donald Trump said during an Oval Office press conference that he plans to meet with China and Russia to discuss how all three countries can reduce their military spending, adding that there is no reason for the U.S. to be spending nearly $1 trillion on the military. He went on to say that nuclear de-escalation would also be a priority for him during those discussions, and added, "There's no reason for us to be building brand new nuclear weapons. We already have so many, you could destroy the world 50 times over, 100 times over. And here we are building new nuclear weapons. And they're building new nuclear weapons. And China's trying to catch up." All words we've been wanting to hear from the President of the United States at some point during the last 80 years. But as for follow-through, Newsweek quoted Alistair Burnett, head of media for the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons and a monthly commentator here on Nuclear Hot Seat. And Burnett said, "President Trump has a long track record of talking about nuclear weapons and the threat they pose to humanity. We don't have much detail on what President Trump's strategy is, but we want to see him follow through on his talk of denuclearization and engage Russia, China, and all the other nuclear-armed states on eliminating nuclear weapons. The best way they could all do that would be to join the UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons that came into force in 2021, and half of all countries have already signed or ratified it. It is the existing pathway under international law to fair and verifiable disarmament." End quote. As regards Trump following through on this promise, Nuclear Hot Seat would just like to add, remember the eggs. Over to Ukraine, where a Russian drone has caused significant damage to the radiation containment shelter at the disused Chernobyl nuclear power plant. It is reported that 15 square meters, or almost 18 square yards, of external cladding of the arch-shaped new safe confinement building was damaged, and damage to both the outer and inner shell of the structure has been identified. Chernobyl is the site of the world's worst civil nuclear catastrophe when one of its four reactors exploded in 1986, spewing radiation that contaminated a 30-square-mile area immediately around the reactors and sent a plume of radiation as far as Scandinavia and east into Russia. Firefighters worked over the weekend to tackle smoldering roof insulation in the giant protective shelter. Radiation levels have remained normal, and according to the International Atomic Energy Agency, structural support beams did not appear to have suffered major damage. IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi said, "This was clearly a very serious incident, with a drone hitting and damaging a large protective structure at a major nuclear site." And Edwin Lyman, Director of Nuclear Power Safety with the Union of Concerned Scientists, said, "Unbelievable. The radioactive fuel materials within the structure are not stable and are potentially dispersible. You do not want fire or explosions anywhere near them." Other nuclear experts called it one of the most potentially dangerous attacks since Russia invaded Ukraine almost 3 years ago. In other nuclear news, Belgium has retired its oldest nuclear power reactor, Unit 1 of the Doel nuclear power plant. This after 50 years of operations and in line with Belgium's 2003 nuclear phase-out policy, under which two other reactors have already been shut down. The Doel 1 reactor was originally set to be taken out of service on its 40th anniversary in February of 2015. However, the law was amended in 2013 and 2015 to provide for it to remain operational an additional 10 years. Fortunately, this deadline has not been extended. Belgium's last two reactors are currently scheduled to close in November 2025. Over to Japan, where Rafael Grossi, the ever-traveling head of the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency, will visit Fukushima this week to inspect vast storage sites holding soil contaminated by the 2011 nuclear disaster. The Japanese government is yet to finalize a disposal plan for the 13 million cubic meters of soil, which was stripped from the region to reduce radiation levels. To envision this, it's enough to fill multiple sports stadiums. While Japan intends to recycle around 75% of the soil, which they claim has low enough radioactivity levels for infrastructure projects, such as paving roads, the remainder will be disposed of outside of Fukushima by 2045, but nobody knows exactly where. Olivier Evrard, Research Director at France's Atomic Energy Commission, said that stripping the topsoil, as Japan has done, comes with drawbacks. Quote, "It had an enormous cost, it generated a massive amount of waste, and still poses fertility issues." He was referring to agricultural fertility, but this also would extend to human beings. Meanwhile, Japan is shifting its nuclear policy and proposes maximizing nuclear power rather than reducing reliance on it, as publicly stated in government policies. The plan projects 30 reactors in operation, and the move has sparked opposition from environmental groups who warn of safety risks associated with aging reactors. Eileen Miyoko Smith, executive director of Green Energy, said, "Many nuclear plants are old, and the technology they use is even older. The cost of retrofitting are high, so even operating existing plants is no longer commercially viable." While Hisayo Takada of Greenpeace Japan argued that extending reactor lifespans to 60 years or beyond is, quote, "a major experiment with catastrophic potential." We'll have this week's featured interview in just a moment. But first, it's less than 2 weeks until the United Nations Meeting of States Parties on the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, or TPNW, convenes. The 73 countries that have signed and ratified the ban, which is international law, along with those countries considering it and others that are observing the process, will come together at the United Nations for the third Meeting of States Parties on March 3 to 7. I covered the second Meeting of States Parties for Nuclear Hot Seat in December of 2023, and it resulted in two episodes containing interviews with diplomats, politicians, and campaigners from around the world that captured the excitement, optimism, difficulties, hard work, and shared love of life in this international community. I will be there again to bring you the information from international representatives of the movement to rid this planet of nuclear weapons. But you know, I am still in need of help with funding to cover the expenses of this trip. That's where you come in. I'm asking for donations of any size to help. It's tax deductible, and we make it easy for you to accomplish. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com, click on the red donate button and follow the prompts. Or you can send money directly through Zelle to info@nuclearhotseat.com, and that prevents any fees from being taken out. Know that I am deeply excited and honored to once again be able to bring you information from the front lines of anti-nuclear activism from around the world. Whatever you can do to help, you are making a difference to the show and to the world and to me. And as always, I'm deeply grateful that you're listening and that you care. Now here's this week's featured interview. Project 2025 is now the leading blueprint for the remaking of American democracy into whatever it's about to turn into, and it threatens to have severe impact on our nuclear future. It promotes the resumption of atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons, something we ended in 1962, and steps hard on all alternative energy programs. Among the greatest concerns about the slash-and-burn tactics of Elon Musk and the unregulated Department of Government so-called efficiency is the risk to classified nuclear information, including potential access to the nuclear launch codes by unvetted personnel. To learn a more detailed explanation of 2025, as well as the resumption of atmospheric testing, I called upon the expertise of Carl Grossman. He is an award-winning veteran environmental journalist with more than 50 years of experience covering nuclear issues. Carl knows where the nuclear bodies are buried, and among his many achievements, his reporting was in large part responsible for 11 nuclear power reactors not being built on Long Island. Now he takes aim at what we are facing from Project 2025, DOGE, and Elon Musk. Note that this was recorded just before we learned about the mass firings and attempted rehirings at the National Nuclear Security Administration. I spoke with Carl Grossman on Friday, February 14, 2025. Carl Grossman, it's always great to have you here with us on Nuclear Hot Seat.
A pleasure always to be with you, Libby.
Let's start out with some background, because there are a lot of nuclear issues that are up for consideration right now. First of all, what is the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty? When was it passed, and what is it supposed to do?
Well, that was 1963, and it was a real breakthrough. It was signed by the United States, the United Kingdom, and the Soviet Union, and it prohibited atmospheric tests of nuclear weapons, testing of nuclear weapons in space, and underground tests weren't prohibited exactly, but they would be banned if any radioactivity from those tests got beyond the nation in which they were being conducted. And it came after a realization in this country, in the United States, about the impacts of atmospheric nuclear weapons. A very important was Dr. Ernest Sternglass, a physicist among the founders of the Radiation and Public Health Project. And he had been studying the impacts of fallout all over this country. And President Kennedy signed the treaty, and he said it can be a step towards freeing the world from the fears and dangers of radioactive fallout. And he talked about, and this was a national address he gave, he spoke about children with cancer in their bones, with leukemia in their blood, with poison in their lungs. I mean, he really, Kennedy appreciated the consequences of atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons.
One of the factors I know that played into President Kennedy's decision was the famous study of baby teeth. It proved pivotal in his decision to move to ban atmospheric tests. Briefly, what was Operation Baby Tooth and what did it show?
From all over the country, baby teeth were collected. St. Louis was the central collection point for these baby teeth. And what folks suspected the impacts of nuclear weapons testing in the atmosphere thought was that baby teeth might be showing increased levels of strontium-90, which is a terrible radioactive substance, a carcinogen, causing, among other health problems caused. And in fact, that turned out to be the truth. During the years of atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons, the buildup was enormous in baby teeth, 63 times the level of what it had been before atmospheric testing was done on a large scale. And let me just add here, because it's so important, with the enactment of the Test Ban Treaty, within 5 years, the amount of strontium-90 in baby teeth collected went down by 50%. So there were many lives saved by that treaty.
Given that today's bombs are magnitudes of power greater than those of the 1950s and early 60s, how much worse might the fallout impact be on today's children and the future generations based on a resumption of atmospheric nuclear testing?
There'd be an enormous buildup again. And again, the baby teeth were just canaries in the radioactive coal mine. It would be, as Joseph Mangano, who was the executive director of the Radiation and Public Health Project, says, the consequences of atmospheric testing again would be a disaster. And we know what happened way back decades ago. To do it again with these bigger and even more lethal weapons would be a huge disaster. However, the Project 2025 report of the Heritage Foundation, this far right-wing organization, which is providing the playbook for the Trump administration, is calling for a resumption of atmospheric nuclear weapons tests. And the Trump administration has been following recommendation after recommendation in its 900-page Project 2025 report. And it's quite likely that the Trump administration will follow this suggestion.
What possible justification is given by Project 2025 and the Heritage Foundation for resumption of nuclear weapons testing? Why would we need that, according to them?
According to them, it would provide deterrence. It'll show, hey, we have these nuclear weapons, and look, we just exploded one. You kind of see what a nuclear weapon is about in U.S. hands. Don't fool around with us.
So blackmail, basically. Planetary blackmail.
Yeah. Totally lacking the advances we've made in understanding the consequences of radioactivity. These bomb tests by the U.S. were in Nevada, and that fallout spread all over the United States. Indeed, where I live on Long Island, the Peconic River, which is the main east-west river on Long Island, was found to contain, I did a story about this decades ago, plutonium and strontium-90 and cesium-137. It was the second hottest river in terms of radioactivity in the United States. There was a creek near West Valley, New York, where they had a project to recycle nuclear fuel, that had the number one placement. But here on Long Island, you had a hot river because, according to Andrew Hull, in these stories I wrote decades ago when he was the senior health physicist at Brookhaven National Laboratory, the fault was the bomb tests way over 2,000, more than 2,000 miles away in Nevada. And the Peconic River is just one example of where some of that radioactivity from the nuclear weapons testing in Nevada went.
And this radioactivity, because it's linked to isotopes that have very long, what's called the half-life, until it becomes even half as radioactive as it was to begin with, because it has such long periods of time, hundreds, thousands, sometimes with plutonium, 24,000 years of radioactivity, that stuff's still there. It's not going away. And any additional explosions would just add to it. Would that be accurate?
Yes. And just one addendum in terms of the Peconic River. The headwaters of the Peconic River begin at Brookhaven National Laboratory, where this fellow Hull worked. And years later, in an environmental impact statement, when the National Laboratory, which is a Superfund site, quite justifiably, was requesting the state of New York to allow an upgrade of its sewage treatment plant and filed an environmental impact statement, it acknowledged in that EIS that it had been dumping strontium-90 and cesium and plutonium into the Plutonic River too. So I think what Hull was talking about was only part of the story.
Given that we're at a point where we don't know what's going to happen from day to day, what, if anything, can you think of that we can do to raise our voices and protest and hopefully prevent any resumption of atmospheric nuclear testing?
Well, I think we have to do all we can manage to do politically, which is very difficult considering that what Trump wants, like whatever Lola wants, an old song, Trump gets from the United States Congress. The U.S. Supreme Court is stacked with far-right Trumpsters. We have a free press in this country, but there's been a lot of bending and surrendering to the power of Trump. So I think it'll take political action. It'll take protests. I mean, this is a serious issue, this move to resume atmospheric nuclear testing. And the fallout spreads beyond the Peconic River. I mean, the fallout moves with the winds all over the world. If, again, we're going to have what President Kennedy called children with cancer in their bones and leukemia in their blood and poison in their lungs, we got to block, we got to stop, we got to prevent atmospheric nuclear weapons testing from happening.
You have a great article about this that appeared in nationofchange.org called America's Nuclear Gamble, The Dangerous Push to Resume Atmospheric Testing, which goes into all of this and much more. And we will link to it on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this current episode. We will also find a link or a means of people to be able to view a film on the baby tooth study called Silent Fallout. It really should just be called the baby tooth study because that's how everybody refers to it, so that listeners can further educate themselves, further get enraged, and find ways to move forward on this. I'd like to shift this to a more immediate concern, which is Elon Musk's possibility of gaining access to sensitive nuclear information and possibly even the nuclear launch codes through his so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. They are going line by line through the government budget and seeming to cut anything with which he does not agree. Doesn't matter any kind of validity. It's just if he decides it needs to go, it goes. And of course, it is creating plenty of outrage. There's more than enough to go around. But one of the government agencies he's undoubtedly going to examine is the National Nuclear Security Administration, or NNSA. It has a budget of $20 billion a year, much of it spent on classified work. And Musk and his crew of juvenile computer coders will be doing their usual to it, as they've been doing in so many other instances, kicking down firewalls, mucking around with highly classified information. And in the NNSA's instance, this includes the agency acquiring fissile material, which is what's needed in order to build the explosive part of the bombs, manufacturing nuclear weapons, and preventing America's nuclear technology from leaking. So the question then becomes, taking this back to square one, what qualifications do Musk and his teeny bopper tech crew have to evaluate nuclear matters?
Well, let me in full deal with that issue, but let me just insert also, beyond stopping nuclear weapons tests in the atmosphere, as we've discussed through the years, Libby, I think it's very important for the world to abolish nuclear weapons, period. I mean, after World War I, the world understood what chemical weapons. Tens of thousands of soldiers were killed by mustard gas and these other chemical weapons used in World War I. And there was a series of treaties in the 1920s prohibiting, banning the use of chemical weapons. It's not been perfect through the decades, but in the main, it's held. And I think the same thing has to be done in regard to nuclear weapons. They, like chemical weapons, probably even more so, are horrific. It's nuclear apocalypse if we're going to have a war with nuclear weapons. The doomsday clock has been set closer to midnight, which represents a nuclear apocalypse, than it's ever been. Now, it's 89 seconds to midnight. So beyond banning, again, nuclear weapons tests in the atmosphere, the world has to get together and ban nuclear weapons. As to Musk, it's fairly frightening. I mean, I have this article, it's from a few days ago from Newsweek. Doge, which is the acronym for his entity that he has set up for Trump, gains access to department that oversees nuclear weapons. The piece starts about how it's gained access to the department without a government background check on its young workers. It talks about one Luke Farator, 23. He apparently is in the middle of this effort. Farator's placement in the Department of Energy, says Newsweek, which oversees America's nuclear weapons, raises serious security and governance concerns because he hasn't been given any standard background investigation needed to access the department's system. So Farator has bypassed a security check which any other American citizen would be subject to and now has access to secret information which could potentially be used against his fellow citizens. There's a very important piece just a few days ago in The Atlantic magazine headed "If Doge Goes Nuclear" and talks about Doge moving into this agency. Doge stands for the Department of Government Efficiency and secret, very secretive nuclear weapons, classified material now can be accessed by unclassified Doge. Here's a piece from Raw Story, also a couple of days ago. Elon Musk's Doge boys think this is a video game as Trump plots his second coup. And let me just talk about Trump. Let me talk, too, about Musk and nuclear power or nuclear weapons. He sort of combines the two. For example, he's been selling for years now T-shirts with Nuke Mars on them. They say Nuke Mars. Sometimes you'll see video. Just go to Google and do video of Nuke Mars Musk, and you'll see pictures of Elon Musk with his Nuke Mars T-shirt. And the basis of nuking Mars for Musk is that he wants humanity to settle Mars, but the atmosphere of Mars is not too suitable for human beings. He has this plan to, now would you believe this, to detonate 10,000 hydrogen bombs on Mars. In fact, you want to see a piece in Nation of Change about this. It's a 2020 piece. I detail this, and it's been written about in other places. And with the detonation of hydrogen bombs, thousands of hydrogen bombs on Mars, there'd be a buildup of carbon dioxide, and that would somehow make the air, I don't know exactly how, breathable. I mean, this guy is talking about mad science. It'd also make Mars radioactive, of course. Musk has a very easygoing attitude, obviously, to nuclear. He says the number of deaths, and I'm quoting here, from nuclear power plants is minuscule compared to fossil fuel. Now, coal is a pretty dangerous substance to burn for power, but nuclear, he has said, shutting down nuclear plants, period, is total madness, and that Germany should reopen its nuclear power plants. So here's a guy who is very easygoing in regard to atomic power and atomic weaponry, just at a time when the Trump administration, that we can go back to the Project 2025 report on this, is getting ready to push nuclear power. Here's another article where an official of, this is an investment group called TEMA, T-E-M-A, folks can Google this, says nuclear energy is set for a renaissance that will be accelerated by backing from President Trump's administration. And let me return to this Project 2025. It's 900 pages. Folks have to read it. You can download it from the web. Let me just read a couple of items being recommended. One after another, they're being adopted by the Trump people. Streamline the nuclear regulatory requirements and licensing process. I'm reading right from Project 2025. Such changes will help to lower costs and accelerate the development and deployment of civilian nuclear, such as advanced nuclear reactors, including small modular reactors, just one after another here, in terms of weaponry, fund the design, development, and deployment of new nuclear warheads, including the production of plutonium pits in quality. Yucca Mountain, this is a mountain riddled with earthquake faults and so forth.
It's above an aquifer.
Yeah, and the U.S. decided, hey, this wasn't a place to bury or try to bury in this mountain nuclear waste because of these issues. Nevertheless, the Project 2025 report says Yucca Mountain remains a viable option for waste management, and the Department of Energy should recommit to working with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission as it reviews the Department of Energy's permit application for a repository. That's on page 397, so you don't have to leap through all the 900 pages. Also on page 397, another recommendation, restart Yucca Mountain licensing. That's 377-2. And going back to the Test Ban Treaty, reject ratification of the, this is 399, the Test Ban Treaty, the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, and indicate a willingness to conduct nuclear tests. I mean, this is some playbook. It goes into, look at this one. 378, end focus on climate change and green energy. I mean, wow, this is beyond a playbook. This is a U.S. Mein Kampf. This administration, and I've been a journalist a long time, and I've covered energy, and I've covered environmental issues, and wrote a book on weapons in space. I've covered issues beyond the surface of this planet. And I've never seen anything like this Trump administration. I mean, it began the day he was sworn in. I mean, he had the United States withdraw from the Paris Agreement. He paused, and I'm sure the pause will last 4 years, for as long as he's in office, wind power projects. I mean, wind and solar is our way ahead. But what he wants is what Project 2025 dictates. Let me read another little recommendation from Project 2025. The Biden administration's assault on the energy sector, as the administration has used its regulatory might to make coal, oil, and natural gas operations very expensive, while forcing the economy to build out and rely on unreliable renewables, goes on how this approach has been applied to pesticides and chemicals as the Biden administration pushes the greening of agriculture and manufacturing, among other industrial activities. This has to be reversed. I mean, they want to reverse even small things in Project 2025 in terms of having the country go backwards. Eliminate energy efficiency standards for appliances. I mean, they're not missing a beat. Eliminate political and climate change interference in the Department of Energy approvals of liquefied natural gas exports. What this is the gas produced largely by fracking. So we shouldn't have any concern about climate change, global warming, with the export of the fracking gas. Here's another one. The U.S. should not use environmental issues like climate change as a reason to stop liquefied natural gas, so-called natural gas projects. I mean, on and on, and it even gets into race. The U.S. government at long last, and as a journalist, I've written a lot about this through the decades, finally took action against environmental racism, or what's been called environmental justice, the siting of toxic facilities and communities of Black and brown people. For years now, talking about an environmental impact statement, the government has to note whether there's an impact in regard to environmental justice. Well, Project 2025, one of its recommendations is to eliminate the Office of Environmental Justice in the Environmental Protection Agency. And indeed, that is happening. I mean, here's a piece in the New York Times from a few days ago. EPA workers who assist heavily polluted communities, these are the folks who work for EPA's Office of Environmental Justice, 168 folks were placed on administrative leave on Thursday. Here, finally, at long last, we were going forward in terms of fairness and ending environmental racism and environmental justice. On that environmental issue, we would go backwards. It's utterly frightening what is going on.
It's like they are, by fiat and by presidential order, bombing us back to the Stone Age. Everything is going backwards, and it's terribly frightening. So looking again at the National Nuclear Security Agency, they have been told by DOGE to provide access that the people on staff deem inappropriate or even dangerous to U.S. security interests. But what recourse do they have to resist turning over the keys to the kingdom?
This DOGE is a very dubious component in government led by Elon Musk and his band now of these, nothing wrong with young people, but they've been sent in to urge these departments of anybody who doesn't conform with the dictates of Project 2025. I don't know if you'd call them values, but Trump thinks is correct. When Jules Feiffer, in an interview, the cartoonist, just before he died, in a little newspaper on Long Island, the Shelter Island Reporter said that Joseph McCarthy was a senator, but this man, Trump, is the president. So the McCarthy era and the hideous nature of that is multiplied many times in terms of outrageous and horrible activity and actions by the power that Trump has, and particularly power that would be very difficult to stop with our system of checks and balances because of his domination of the House of Representatives and Congress and the U.S. Supreme Court. And increasingly, and I say this so sorrowfully, a good segment of, I mean, not just the Murdoch media, but a good chunk of the American press is not doing what it should be doing. And it's kind of the last bastion of democracy in challenging Trump.
And one last thought or question. If Elon Musk either has gained or is in the process of gaining access to the nuclear launch codes, would he even need Trump or anything that looks like an American democracy government in place? Or would he have the ability to, you should pardon the old use of the word, Trump the rest of the world by saying, you can't stop me, this is what I can do, and I don't care, so do what I want to do, or you're toast?
Well, anybody whose vision has emphasized and advertised on the t-shirts he peddles, Nuke Mars, has the vision that we should use 10,000 hydrogen bombs, he's talking hydrogen bombs, to somehow change the atmosphere of Mars is, wow, consider what he might be capable of.
What can we do? What actions can we take without worrying about whether they're ultimately effective or not, but what can we do to get away from being frozen in fear or overwhelmed? Because this is shock and awe. They're trying to overwhelm us and stop us from taking any meaningful action. What meaningful actions might we take at this time to at least move our voices forward and find out whether they're effective later?
Action, 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 or as a labor leader of a century ago said, organize, 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 because in numbers, we could attempt to cause change. Here's a piece I'm looking at. It's just a few days ago in the Foreign Affairs magazine, a very centrist magazine. The Path to American Authoritarianism is the title of the piece. What Comes After Democratic Breakdown? It's February 11th, 2025 is the publication date. You can download it online. It's a big, extensive piece on a big, extensive threat to this extraordinary, this marvelous experiment called American democracy.
Anything you want to add you haven't had a chance to say yet?
That's all I need to say. It's a very depressing subject. Our lives are at stake. Our lives are at stake. And the lives of future generations.
Carol Grossman, it is always an adventure interviewing you. because the amount of information that you bring to the table, your specificity, and your soul, your heart that you bring to it as well, is necessary for us to know about and be able to move forward, hopefully heartened, hopefully encouraged, hopefully inspired, hopefully with a path to do something with the anger and the sense of helplessness that I think so many of us are feeling. And for all of that, and for just being you, I want to thank you for being my guest this week on Nuclear Hot Seat.
A pleasure, Libby.
Award-winning veteran environmental journalist, Carl Grossman. We will post a link to Carl's article on atmospheric testing and why it's such a bad idea. And we will also link to our interview with Joseph Mangano, the epidemiologist behind the baby tooth study. And it's an interview from Nuclear Hot Seat number 596 in November of 2022. All this will be linked on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 712.
Activists, shout out.
One of the most important tools that we have in fighting against nukes is the annual report from Don't Bank on the Bomb, which analyzes in detail the involvement of the 24 companies involved in the development, maintenance, and modernization of nuclear weapons arsenals of France, China, India, the United Kingdom, and the United States. This year's report has just been issued. It's called At Great Cost: The Companies Building Nuclear Weapons and Their Financiers. The report, jointly published by PACS and ICANN, exposes 260 banks, pension funds, and other financial institutions that continue to financially back the nuclear weapons industry. Among their findings, the number of institutions with significant financial exposure to companies involved in the nuclear weapons industry has dropped by one quarter since the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons entered into force in 2021. Just under $270 billion with a B dollars, USD, was provided to the 24 nuclear weapons producing companies in loans and underwriting. While still a massive amount of money, this represents a drop of $6.2 billion since the previous Don't Bank on the Bomb report. And there are almost no investments from financial institutions in countries that join the TPNW. Really significant findings. We will link to it on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 712. And as for how you can utilize this report with your own banking institutions or financial advisors, here's our favorite PSA-like report from Susie Snyder, who was with Don't Bank on the Bomb and is now the program coordinator for the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons.
It's amazing. It's called Don't Bank on the Bomb. And that's the website, too, don'tbankonthebomb.com. Step one, find out if your bank invests in nuclear weapon producers. Step two, contact your bank. Tell them you don't want them to. Step three, tell the world what the bank says. And if they don't get rid of investments, go public, because no bank wants to look like a bad guy. It takes one or two people only to make a huge difference. And that can cut off the money stream to the companies that make nuclear weapons. You and I, we have more power than we think, and that power is sitting in our wallet.
And how can people find out whether the companies that we're told the bank is supporting have any connection with the nuclear weapons industry?
Well, we do a significant investigation every year. Now, it's not completely exhaustive, but we profile 28 companies that have association with nuclear weapons modernization and maintenance. And it's on our website, don'tbankonthebomb.com. And we really want people to use our information and contact us all the time. You can do that in, you know, through the website really easily. Contact me on Twitter, whatever works. And I'm happy to find out more. And if you find out, learn about more companies involved in nuclear weapons, tell us. We'll do the research and we'll make it public for everybody to use.
Love it.
I loved it when I first heard about it, and I love it still. So if you've not yet done so, give it a shot. Remember, your success in this is not measured by how much you do or do not have in any given financial institution. It's in opening the subject and promoting the conversation within that bank, among financial advisors, anywhere in the financial profile at all. Because by raising the conversation, we have already made an impact. And a shout out to Joanna Keane Lopez. She is a native artist and part of a group of artists exploring non-literal and multi-layered depictions of nuclear injury and anxiety, incorporating multimedia sculpture, indigenous totems, nuclear mascots, and taxidermized super rats. This sounds like an art exhibit that I would actually want to go to. She is the daughter of Damasio Lopez, a veteran nuclear activist against depleted uranium weapons who grew up in Socorro, New Mexico, less than 30 miles from the Trinity blast, which happened when he was only 2 years old. Transgenerational activism at its best, as Keane Lopez carries the torch forward. Her work is featured in a current article in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientist, and we will link to it on our website. Again, that's nuclearhotseat.com. The episode is 712. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, February 18, 2025. If you'd like to make certain that you never again miss a single episode of Nuclear Hot Seat, we make it easy for you. Go to nuclearhotseat.com. There's a yellow opt-in box there. Just put in your first name and an email address, and every week you will get one, just one email in the link with a short description of that show's content. We will not sell or trade or otherwise compromise your information. We just want to make sure you get the show each week. The alternative is to sign up through your favorite podcast channel because, quite frankly, we are everywhere. Now, you are places where we're not, so we need your help. If you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. And remember, if you can go to Nuclear Hot Seat and donate, we really need your help, especially with my trip to New York to cover the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons just around the corner. Anything you can do helps, and we really appreciate your support. This episode of Nuclear Hot Seat is copyright 2025, Libby Halevi and Nuclear Hot Seat. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed, as long as you cite the program, website, names of any guest whose comments you use, and me. For now, this is Libby Halevi of Nuclear Hot Seat reminding you that as Ralph Nader, the lawyer, environmentalist, activist, and advocate for so many causes, recently stated, major news outlets have largely avoided covering the voices of civil society on a whole host of important causes. The corporate media needs to step it up in giving voice to grassroots activism without their covering the actions, litigation, initiatives, and reports of civil institutions and labor unions, little or nothing will flow from their efforts. Ralph Nader. There you have it, your weekly nuclear wake-up call. So whatever you do, do not go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's da bomb.